Welcome to Radioactive. I'm your host today, Gina Edvelson. In the 1960s, President Hugh B. Brown, a counselor in the LDS presidency, said the following quote. He said, "I admire men and women who have developed the questing spirit, who are unafraid of new ideas as stepping stones to progress. We should, of course, respect the opinions of others, but we should also be unafraid to dissent if we are informed. Thoughts and expressions compete in the marketplace of thought, and in that competition, truth emerges triumphant. Only error fears freedom of expression. This free exchange of ideas is not to be deplored as long as men and women remain humble and teachable. Neither fear of consequence or any kind of coercion should ever be used to secure uniformity of thought in the church. People should express their problems and opinions and be unafraid to think without fear of ill consequences. We must preserve freedom of the mind in the church and resist all efforts to suppress it." Well, that was in the 60s. And now, Grant H. Palmer, a three-time director of the LDS Institute of Religion in California and Utah, a former instructor at the Church College of New Zealand, and former LDS seminary teacher, has heeded this call. In 1992, Palmer's book, An Insider's View of Mormon Origins, was published. And now, largely due to this book, Grant H. Palmer has been summoned to an LDS church disciplinary hearing this Sunday. He is facing the possibility of excommunication. So one must ask, what is the state of dissent? What is the state of conversation in the largest church in our state? What is the meaning of belief, and how do historians combine their religious beliefs with historical fact? Fortunately for us, we have with us today Grant Palmer to talk about his research and his experience. Grant Palmer, welcome to Radioactive.
Thank you.
Let's start, before we get into your book and some of your ideas, talking a little bit about how you personally experience being Mormon. And maybe that can set up how all of this is happening for you.
I'm a fourth to sixth generation member of the church on all sides. Ancestors were pioneers. My parents were very good friends with a number of the leaders, Joseph Fielding Smith, Bruce and Amelia McConkie lived down the road from us. So my background has been very, very staunch in the church.
And clearly your vocation as well is very tied and has been very tied to your participation as a member.
Yes, I've always been a dedicated, true believer, at least up until about 1985 when I had some suspicions about some of the Mormon past. But yes, I've been largely an LDS Institute director for the church educational system in Northern, Southern California, Utah, New Zealand, over that period of time.
You talk about, well, you printed this quote in the introduction to the book, the quote that I read from Hugh B. Brown.
And that's not just from Hugh B. Brown. That was given at BYU as a statement representing the view of the church.
Is that still the view of the church?
I don't know that they've superseded it. So I'm hoping it still is.
You talk about, or you just mentioned that it was that you were a true believer up until a certain time when you started having doubts. What did that mean for you? What did that look like for you?
Well, I've always been open to ideas. As a teacher, we're always seeking for material, and you come across things that you haven't learned before. You look into them, you study them. I've always shared things. I've always been open, and I suppose that's why I'm still that way. If it's true, and I think it's true, and it's responsible, I think the LDS people, it's owed to them that we tell them the truth and try to be honest with our history and in all aspects of life.
And for you, it seems that this honesty hasn't changed how you are, that you want to participate in the LDS church.
I still do, yes. I participate as much as I'm able to these days. I don't have any current church callings, but I still attend. I still take the sacrament at the worship service, and I pay my tithing and things of that nature, which some people find hard to understand. I guess I'd like to see a shift, a little shift in the church, that we really talk more about Jesus Christ and less of just about everything else.
And what is everything else?
Well, a lot of the meetings, we don't get into Jesus Christ and his ministry. So often in my experience over the years, the worship service, we're supposed to remember him in that service according to the sacrament prayers. And the tendency is, as we drop his name, we do sing about him. We use his name, invoke it in prayer. But when it comes to the preaching, there's not much about Jesus Christ in the worship service. And then if you move to the Sunday school, it's much the same way. Once every 4 years, we talk about the life and ministry of Jesus, maybe 4 months out of the year, and then move on to the epistles. But that's just once every 4 years. And then in the Priesthood Relief Society lessons for adults, the last 8 years, they've been studying modern prophets 2 to 3 weeks a month. And I counted up those lessons. I think there's 192 of them, and maybe 20 of them directly relate to Jesus Christ. So the three-hour experience at church I'd like to see more emphasis on Jesus Christ at the local level. I think at the general level, that is certainly not as much a problem. But at the local level, where I go to church, and throughout my life where I've gone to church, I think we need a shift, especially now with some of the problems in our history.
Well, it sounds like, to some people, it could sound like what you're looking for is a more mainstreamed Christian church or experience in Christianity.
Well, I think the church is certainly making overtures to mainstream Christianity. We had a speaker in the tabernacle for the first time in 106 years. I understand a chair is being set up at Claremont Theological College in California. There's a Thursday night program on Channel 20 here locally that invites LDS and Protestant pastors to discuss areas of unity and understanding and so forth. I hope and I think the church is moving in that direction. I think it's a very healthy one, but I just like to see more Jesus Christ in the experience.
You talk about your book and the ideas in your book as being part of the new Mormon history. Maybe you can explain that, what you mean by that, and then we'll follow up with talking about some of your ideas in the book.
Okay. A new Mormon history kind of arrived with Leonard J. Arrington, the new church historian. He was a professional. This was in 1972, and he brought a professionalism, and they, you know, cataloged documents and provided a more professional way of handling and keeping documents, preserving documents. But he also had a cadre of PhD candidates in history, and a lot of good history was done. The archives were opened up, and a lot of history came out. So a lot of that was written by professionals, and a good amount of it, I guess you could say, or a certain amount of it was written for professionals. What my book is to take that 35-year period, roughly, since 1972, when Leonard Arrington came along. We kind of call that the New Mormon History. And my book is a distillation of what they basically found, and I put it in one book, and I made it more understandable for a layman's audience. So it's reached a broader audience. It's penetrating the grassroots, and I think that's probably the main reason that the book's been out 2 years, but now they're going to take some action on me, is because While professionals know about the historical problems, the layman does not, because they've never really been taught it anywhere in the church system. I know I certainly didn't, and was would not have taught things that are in my book to my students, because that just wouldn't be appropriate to the employer. But I think that's what's happening, and so a number of people are reading this book and say, I've never heard this anywhere, and I'm disturbed by it, and some of them, I guess, have had damage to faith, and the church wants to, I think, discipline me primarily over that influence.
And why has it taken 2 years? Because the book has been out for 2 years.
Yes, I think it's taken that long to do, in their mind, a suitable damage to faith, that now's they're going to move on it. But I don't see this book. It was on the waning after 2 years. You can imagine it was waning in sales, and now they've just they'll sell another 1,000 or 2 copies by Christmas, thanks to this court action. And that's too bad. I have made every effort to keep this out of the media, and I wanted to solve this privately, but unfortunately it is very much in the media. I said to my stake president that there was interest in this case beyond our neighborhood, and that's kind of all I said, but I think he's beginning to understand, or perhaps he anticipated this, but there is now beginning to be a great deal of media. But as I'm saying, this book was in the waning stages, and now it's been kind of revived because of the court action. But I don't think this is the problem. I think if by throwing me out, the church is hemorrhaging over these issues, and throwing me out is like putting a Band-Aid over the problem, because the Internet is here, and it's going to be here tomorrow, and it's going to be here in the 40, 50 years from now.
Well, we've interviewed a couple times Thomas Murphy, the anthropologist up in Washington State, who's done the DNA research. Well, he's compiled, done a paper on DNA research that shows clearly and scientifically that Native Americans are not from Lamanites, which goes against Mormon stories in the Book of Mormon. And, you know, it's interesting talking to him that when he was being threatened with excommunication, it was very painful experience for him. He wants to participate in whatever level he wants to participate, and because he tells the truth, it's hard for him to think about being kicked out, being forced to leave. And I'm wondering how that feels to you, that idea that you may be asked to leave.
Sad and very, very painful. Religion shouldn't be this painful. I buried a sweetheart wife who was 47. I know what grief is. I counseled thousands of inmates at the Salt Lake County Jail and saw their grief because they didn't know their future until a judge told them. So I know what grief is. I went through a year of cancer where I had 3 surgeries in 2002, 6 months of chemo, and 6 weeks of radiation and 3 surgeries. I know what that kind of pain and grief is, but I think this one is the most difficult of all, and it's an emotional thing with me. I in some ways I think I've loved my church too much, because I just can't sit by and just watch what we're saying and doing. Only the truth's good enough for Latter-day Saints, and this is the truth as I see it, and I stand ready to repudiate anything that is found wrong. But what I've found is that the response has pretty well been to just attack you. They won't ad hominem arguments, character assassination. I'm a pretty straight up and down guy. They don't really have much on me, I don't think. But that's not the way we should be doing. That's not the way Savior would do it. They'd put your arm around you and say, hey, we need to talk about some of these issues and let's sort them out. So far, that has not been done. And I don't know how to repent from something that's true or probably true. I don't know how to do that. And I shouldn't have to.
I I guess what I see, and we can get into talking about some of your ideas, but just talk about, I guess, a movement within Mormon intellectuals to talk about facts and how they relate to the stories that people have been told either through the Book of Mormon or through church leaders, Sunday school, that kind of thing, is that it seems like a different way of dealing with religion that a lot of LDS people may not be ready for, which is talking about that things don't have to be factual to also be true. They can be true in a metaphorical way without being factual, that you can look at things and... I mean, it's a different way of looking at it. The kind of straight-laced Mormon has been told to just accept these stories, and what the party line is factual.
Well, the church is, in my opinion, is kind of at a crossroads, because there are various ways of looking at Scripture and various degrees of orthodoxy, various degrees of views on different subjects. The question is, are they going to extend the umbrella? How far are they going to extend it to accommodate different kinds of people? I hope that they will extend that umbrella. I think right now in the church is hemorrhaging, I just don't know that throwing the Mormon liberal out of the church is the answer at this point. But maybe they do. I don't know. We'll find out Sunday at 7 in the morning.
Well, and I mean, lots of churches who are much older than the Mormon church have had to deal with dissent and have factions within their religions that disagree with the party line and openly disagree, and they aren't thrown out. I mean, is some of this has to do with such a young religion trying to maintain its power and its central point?
Well, I don't know that, but you're right. I mean, Notre Dame, a Catholic university, accommodates a great variety of thought. The professors feel safe, much safer than the ones at BYU that I've talked to. And there's a certain amount of a learning curve here, yes.
Well, we're going to take a break. We are talking with Grant H. Palmer, a former church education system employee. He's been an Institute of Religion teacher, and he wrote a book about 2 years ago, An Insider's View of Mormon Origins, talking about some of the myths about Mormonism in the Mormon experience. And he's facing a church disciplinary court this Sunday, the possibility of being excommunicated. We'd love for you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 303-6050, 303-6050, 1-888-404-6050, or you can email us at radioactive@krcl.org. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm a Mormon. Yes, I am. So if you want to study a Mormon, I'm a living specimen. Maybe you think I'm just like anybody else you see.
But trust in my word, you'll quickly observe I'm different as can be.
I'm a Mormon through and through. And if you think that I'm peculiar in the things I say and do, through and through. And if you think that
are listening to KRCL. This is Radioactive. I'm your host today, Gina Edelson. We're talking with Grant Palmer, author of the book An Insider's View of Mormon Origins. Grant Palmer is facing a church disciplinary court this Sunday over his writings, and we're discussing those writings and what is going on with him and how that's affecting him. And we have a call from John in Sacramento, California. John, go ahead.
Hi, Grant.
Yes.
Hey, this is John out here, California. I've spoken with you before.
Yes, go ahead.
Good to hear from you. Good to see you're getting attention on this matter. I wanted to personally thank you in public for the work that you have done for it has brought much needed knowledge to us garden variety Mormons. Now, when I hear the faith-promoting stories in church, and when I hear the cherry-picked and polished portions of history in church, with the information I've gotten from you and many other authors, I can now make a discernment for myself as to whether or not those stories are true.
John, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
So part of the fear for some people is clearly that this information will shake people's faith, make them less faithful. What has your experience been?
I was born and raised in Utah. I no longer live there. Both my wife and I were raised in the Mormon Church, and the thing that shocked us was some of the things that we didn't know about Mormon history. And the first thing that we didn't know was that Joseph Smith was indeed a polygamist.
Has this shaken your faith, I guess?
It has. Mm. I feel like I have been lied to my entire life. I feel like my faith in God and Jesus Christ has been based on a story that was started by Joseph Smith.
Would it have been different for you if you had known that information, if this stuff had just been part of what you learned?
If all of this had been known to me early in my life, I probably wouldn't be a member today.
Hmm.
Because the story just, for me, just doesn't hold water. There's a lot of concern in the Mormon Church about pornography on the Internet. I feel that Mormon history is far more damaging to a Mormon than pornography. It is more prevalent on the Internet. I have spoken with many current Mormons and former Mormons that have been out on the Internet and are simply looking for information to do a lesson, and they type in Mormon something in Google, and they get all these so-called anti-sites, which in my opinion is not anti-Mormon, it's truth. So in other words, truth about the Mormon history has been called anti, in my opinion.
A message of salvation unto the meek will bear.
You there?
Yeah.
Oh, I got some hold.
Yeah, so did we. That was... Right.
It must be the spirit blocking. No, just kidding. What was my train of thought?
Well, actually, that was really interesting, and thanks for your call, John.
Okay, thank you, Grant. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And that, of course, goes back to what you were saying, that the Internet's not going to go away.
No, and one of the things that I think is challenging about the Internet is that there is just a plethora of material you can come up. If you put any combination of words together, that will come up. Unfortunately, a lot of that is kind of very almost anti-Mormon, and then you get kind of nasty Mormon. You get nice critical Mormon, and on the other side, you get kind of nasty apologetical, and then you have the church's website, which is. Some people would view as kind of mild, and there's really nothing kind of in between there, between nice mild and critical nice, and maybe maybe there needs to be a little more in between there, but maybe there needs to be a webmaster to direct people, because it's not all of equal value.
Sure. Let's go to Jake in Salt Lake. Jake, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be able to hear and talk to Grant and support it. And similar to Grant, I was a lifelong Orthodox Mormon, and attending Harvard Divinity School years ago, I came across a bunch of information that was really ground-shaking to my faith and my testimony. And it really took me a long time to sort through issues and things that I had once believed, and to find myself in a comfort place to be still a member and a believing member of the faith, but at the same time frame not accepting a lot of the mythology and things that have to be literally true. And I really just wanted to thank Grant for being able to find the middle ground, and thought his book was very well written in covering that. And I wanted to see how he sees a place in the church for liberal and free-thinking church members as opposed to dogmatic and very orthodox believing members.
Well, it's a very good question, and I don't know that I have an answer to it, but I can tell you one thing. In the 1960s, under President David O. McKay, there was an era of good feeling in this valley. They were generous. Yeah, they would even accept a certain amount of misfits in the church, and they almost seemed to be more tolerant and what have you. I know that a friend of mine has written a book on David O. McKay. It'll be out this coming year. Gregory Prince, and in one of his chapters, he talks about four conservative individuals and four liberal individuals that did damage to the church, and or their books did damage to the church. And David O. McKay, in all eight of those examples, did not publicly excommunicate anyone. In fact, it didn't even get to a public censure. It was a private censure. And somehow or another, I would like to see us return to that kind of attitude in the church where we take a more savior-like approach to how we deal with people who have questions and problems and even want to speak the truth.
What does private censure do or look like? And I guess I'm wondering why that would be more valuable if people are being censored.
Well, I know that Bruce R. McConkie was a member of the Quorum of 70 at the time when he wrote Mormon Doctrine, and President McKay privately censured him and said, who gave you permission to use that title, Mormon Doctrine? And President McKay was concerned because I think it was Bishop Hunt of the Madeline Cathedral, the bishop of the diocese in Salt Lake City. He talked with President McKay and says, do you really think that we are the great and abominable church mentioned in Scripture? And that Elder McConkie had plainly said that they were. And Bishop Hunt, of course, says, well, look, we've had a pretty good relationship here, but this is not going to do our relationship any good if you're going to stand behind this book. And then I'm not sure of the next sentence or two, but the idea was that if we're not going to, if you really think this, then we're going to use, Bishop Hunt said, we're going to use our influence to get your missionaries out of Catholic-dominated countries in Central and South America that we have some control over. Well, you could say that book did some damage or some potential damage, and President McKay is a very gracious person, and he just went ahead and he did call him in, he did censure him, but it was never made public until quite, in recent years.
We have Paul from Winnipeg. We're going global today. Paul, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Grant, I want to comment on your book. I purchased the book soon after it came out, and again, I commend you for writing a layman's history of the LDS Church. I, too, felt concern about the true aspect of the LDS Church, and I remember bringing it forward to my ecclesiastical leader at the time, the bishop, and basically brought these concerns, and as I brought them forward, found myself quickly released from my young man's calling. I was censured, in other words, told, he told the auxiliaries that I was not to speak in church, to give any prayers or comments. I later challenged that, and that was retracted, but private censures is not appropriate as well in regards to truth. I'm a 20-year convert and have seen, because of my questioning was brought forward to the state president, and at that time basically told either I keep my mouth shut or I would lose my membership in the church to protect the good name of the church, and I chose to resign rather to do that. And at that point I have found my family fall apart, my wife leaves me, a couple of my children not talking to me. So it's put me in a very, very difficult situation in standing up for what I believe was true.
Wow. That's, you know, I have to say that's a story I hear from people, that it's a very painful
process. I could not sleep for weeks after I discovered, in regards to, primarily it was the history of Joseph Smith with being married and sealed to previously married women who continued to have husbands. Now that just struck a chord to me, saying, hold on, this isn't what I was taught. And again, as I peeled apart the onion and tried to find out more and more, the more disturbed I became and concerned that this history isn't out there.
What do you say to someone? What do you say to Paul when you hear a story like this?
I totally identify with him. That's because of my understanding of what can happen in these courts and the process of these courts. I mean, that's why I've gone to such great lengths in my case to try to solve this privately. I've made 3 genuine efforts to stop this from coming to this point, and I've failed the last one. I was trying to postpone the court for the state president to get to know me a little better, and he doesn't know me very well. And he told me this morning that the answer is no, the court was going forward. Yes, I think that's... I don't know. Say a little more about his question that you would like me to answer.
No, I was just wondering what you say to someone when you hear a story.
It's
like
sad. This. It's just a sad business is all it is. And I guess the only thing that's comforting is that if this happened to you 50 years ago, you didn't have an internet communication family, and now you can... Now we do.
Certainly. Grant, a question I have for you is how are you treated from other members within your ward and your stake? Because I found once I started questioning that there was very much a standoff and almost people were and continue to be very, very afraid to even communicate or talk with you.
I think that's pretty much true. A lot of them will, you know, smile and shake your hand, but there's no lingering discussions for with most of them, although they're very good people in my ward. And I did bear my testimony once about Jesus Christ, and that afterward the bishop told me that some members thought I was a hypocrite because I didn't, because I'd written this book, and even though I'd spoken of Christ, they thought that was hypocritical.
Well, and certainly the gossip goes with that too, as I've had my good name really slandered by people making comments like that, and back through my family and my children, and I find it very, very difficult. And again, as you say, that handshake and smile, but otherwise behind your back, you know that there's a lot being said.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Sure. Well, and it's interesting because one of the things you wanted from this book was a deeper discussion about belief and about your religion, and it seems like maybe it has the opposite effect almost, that you don't get as deep a discussion as you did even before.
No, and the trend has been in the local wards to, if you raise questions, you're suspect. These questions are often viewed as inappropriate. But, well, there's a lot of people who are reticent at church and won't raise their hand. They will go home to the internet and look around. And
well,
that's what's happening.
Yeah. Let's take a break. We're talking with Grant Palmer, the author of An Insider's View of Mormon Origins. We're talking about his experience with this book that's 2 years old and the fact that he is going before a church disciplinary court on Sunday, early morning Sunday. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 303-6050, 1-888-404-6050. radioactive@carecl.org. We'll be back in a minute.
Faith in God and Jesus, the first thing that we preach. A genuine repentance, the next thing that we teach. Baptism by immersion, you all can see and know. For none can preach the gospel like the Mormons do, like the Mormons do. We say, as in the days of Peter, the same as in our day. 'Tis by the laying on of hands, and oh, we know 'tis true, that none can preach the gospel like the Mormons do, like the Mormons do. The old-time religion is what we want, you know.
You are listening to KRCL. This is Radioactive. I'm your host, Gina Edvilson. We're talking with Grant Palmer. He wrote the book, An Insider's View of Mormon Origins. He's going before a church disciplinary court this Sunday. I have an email here from Annie who says, I'm very touched by your program today. When he said, I don't know how to repent for things that are true, tears came to my eyes because I've lived through this too. There are thousands of us out there. I guess you're finding an extended family, so to speak.
I think so. The internet is really buzzing unbelievably.
I imagine that's how people who are out of state are hearing this program today, even, is over the internet.
Well, not only that, but the Deseret News, Salt Lake Tribune, Ogden Standard Examiner, the LA Times broke a big story this morning. The Associated Press will go national with it Saturday and Sunday. So there's a lot of media out there. 60 Minutes is very interested in this program, and I'll know when I get home whether they're coming this weekend.
That's interesting. You know, we have the fax number here for Gordon B. Hinckley, and I want to give that out because this is a fax where he will see your fax if you send him one. If you have an opinion about this, if you have some idea about what you think should happen here, you can give him a call. And I'll give this now, and I'll give it at the end of the show, too. The number is 801-240-2033. Address it to Gordon B. Hinckley. You know, I think that the hierarchy of the church needs to hear from the rank and file. And that's not a bad idea.
In this case, I don't think the first presidency of the church has initiated this action. This is a lower down than that, and sometimes they don't know about it. I think they probably know about my case, and I don't know what will happen, but I've dedicated my life to this. If I'm tossed out of the church because I'm a true believer in Jesus Christ, I think we should be evaluated by our actions in that regard, and not whether we accept all of what Joseph Smith had to say. And by tossing me from the church, should they do that, they're really forbidding me to take the sacrament on Sunday, which in a strange way subordinates Jesus to Joseph Smith, in my view. And to the outside world, it really asks the question, are Mormons really Christian? Or are they as Christian as we've been hearing they're saying they are? I think that's a sad state of affairs. Is there room in the Church of Jesus Christ for someone who's morally and spiritually centered in Christ? I hope so.
Let's take a call from Justin, who's in Virginia. Justin, go ahead.
Hi, Grant, and I'm glad we have the chance to ask you some questions here. You mentioned some private censorship. Obviously, going on the radio kind of removes any notion of private censorship. Can you ask me just to answer just a few questions? Do you know who leaked this information to the press? I'll just let you answer that real quick. I'm sorry.
It wasn't me who leaked it to the press. I'll just leave it at that. I think it was my publisher, Signature Books.
Were you upset that it got leaked?
No, because we had discussions and kind of agreed that if a court date was set, we would go ahead with the publicity, and they wanted to do that. And But like I say, before that occurred, there have been three genuine attempts to shut this down on my part. So far, they have not worked.
An interesting thing you talk about is how a lot of the discussion that we have in church or about church stuff, we direct toward children and toward people who are potential converts. And so that keeps us from delving very deeply into things that might be seemly or controversial, because we don't want to upset kids and we don't want to put off people who are potential converts. And you talk about having a different arena for, like, maybe the more mature member who's a few generations in, an arena to discuss. But why do we need, why would we really need to, you know, a different discussion for that?
Well, what I had in mind when I mentioned that in my preface is that I counseled thousands of inmates at the Salt Lake County Jail, and they've got four or five problem fires to put out in their life, and if they're battling with drugs and dysfunctional families and criminal activity and a number of other fires or problems in their life, the last thing I want to do is put a book in their face and say, well, assuming that a lot of them wanted to look into the church because they recognize they need spiritual help. And the church, I would say, is very good at helping those kinds of people. They come under a lot of concern. The more MLDS people are very good people and help them a great deal. And so the last thing in the world I want to do with some inmate who wanted to join the church in it, or come back into church, is to stick this book in their face. But for those who've been around three or four generations, and I think we should take a look at this. If you buy this book in the bookstore, for those of you who have, you'll notice that it comes in a shrunk plastic container. You cannot open the book and decide whether you want to buy it. You can see the front cover and the back cover, and that's it. There's a reason for that.
What is that?
Well, just the reason I'm saying, I guess it was our effort to protect the children and the innocent. I'm surprised. I got a call from a father and a 16-year-old daughter, and she loved the book. Obviously, quite precocious, and and when she says, "Well, they're thinking of holding a disciplinary council on Grant Palmer," she on her own wrote a letter to the Los Angeles Times saying a person shouldn't be thrown out of the church for what they think.
Go.
She was my youngest supporter. Also had 80-year-old men.
Sure.
Tell me the same thing.
Let's talk to Ed in Springville. Ed, go ahead.
Yes, Grant. I just wanted you to know that as I was listening to you speak, I could feel how distressed you are about going up against, you know, going to court. I had a similar experience about 12, 13 years ago. And I just want you to know that everything eventually will be okay. That, these last 12, 13 years for me have been wonderful, as I have learned to really discover who Jesus Christ is on a personal level and have found the Godhood that I always knew was within me. And, you know, I just want you to know that the day will come when you will feel better about it, and you'll have wonderful experiences that will make all this just part of the process and of the plan and the path that you've chosen for yourself even before you were born.
I've already done that, Ed. I think this whole ordeal has driven me closer to Jesus Christ, and He hasn't disappointed me. In fact, I have a book coming out that is called The Incomparable Jesus, which will be out for Easter. It should be. It's just ready to go to the printer. But
anyway, just good luck to you. You're going to be just fine.
I feel the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Well-wishers calling in, too. Let's go to an email from Laura in California. She says, I grew up in a Mormon home where information from new Mormon history, such as Grant presents in his book, was openly discussed and available. As a result of growing up in this open environment, I have a strong testimony of the gospel that remains unhurt by new historical discoveries and, she puts, problems, in quotes. With that experience in hand, I believe that only the truth is good enough for the church, and if members are taught the complete truth rather than a whitewashed truth from the beginning, they would be able to move past the historical problems that some leaders are trying to hide so carefully and focus on the joy and love of Christ's promises.
That's a great statement, and if I had to raise my children over again, I would be more open with them. I know people who are and having better success.
Let's go to Mark here in Salt Lake. Mark, go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'll probably be one of the people who goes out and buys Grant's book just because it sounds fascinating. I'm atheistic myself, but I'm also a well-wisher for Grant. And I just wanted to say that I think the people who hide behind religions and hide behind dogma are going to be the people that he doesn't see in heaven if there happens to be a heaven. And I don't mean that negatively or hatefully at all, but I'll just leave it at that. And one quick question, Grant. I wondered if you sort of, in the back of your mind, hope that you are censured so that there's something to go forward with, something that you can use publicly to support your point of view, not necessarily to sell more books, but just to use to make your point more strongly.
I would rather end it before Saturday or Sunday. What was his first comment? I wanted to make a comment on that. What was he saying?
My first comment was that that I was going to go buy your book, that I was atheist, but also a well-wisher. Go ahead.
I think the LDS people should take a look at books like mine. We haven't really taught our LDS church history past very extensively in the church the last 35 years. And the work in the glory seems to be the item. People like to go down to that Cineplex and watch that movie. But I assure you, as exciting as that is, that it's a fictional account of the Steed family, that the real history of the LDS church is downright fascinating. And I would encourage people to take the time and to read a book about our early history. It is truly a fascinating journey.
Well, it also really fascinates me that there's all these adults calling in who are just finding out that Joseph Smith was a polygamist. I mean, it seems to me that the rest of the world sort of takes that for granted, and the ability of the church to hide that from its own members is just astounding.
Well, and Fawn Brody, I mean, she talked about that, and she was maligned her entire life. I mean, you can't. You can get a Mormon congregation riled up. You can't get a congregation riled up any faster than saying Fawn Brody's name. I mean, she really. And in the edition of No Man Knows My History that I read, she wrote a preface that talked about the pain of when she was excommunicated for just doing just telling us the truth as a historian, the way she saw it, and she actually was shocked when she did.
She was indeed. Well, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. There seems to be more and more closet doubters. They seem to be spilling out into the living room, dining room, and the kitchen, and I'd like to think my book did not throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it sure gave the baby a dang good scrubbing.
Let's go to George in Ogden, who has a different idea. George, go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I've read Mr. Palmer's book, and am very familiar, or at least familiar enough that I've read it and know what he says, and I am not a supporter of Mr. Palmer and what he has to say in that book. And it seems to me that with all of the people you've been listening to so far, you need to get a little different viewpoint.
Sure.
As to what is really going on with this book.
What is really going on?
Well, first of all, Mr. Palmer doesn't have anything new to say in the entire book except for one thing. He brings the same old tired anti-Mormon tirades out and considers them from one single point of view, does not take into consideration the other side of the question or the possibility that he may be wrong. He just assumes that those are all correct. And then at the end gives this absolutely fantastic tale about the entire Mormon church and the entire experience of Joseph Smith being based upon a tale by Hoffman called The Golden Pot. Everybody seems to ignore or forget that one of the more fantastic part about his whole presentation is that he seems to believe that Joseph Smith was told a story by an almost complete stranger. He believed or didn't believe the story, but applied the story to his life and concocted this fantastic tale of establishing the church, and then lived by this lie for his entire life through all that persecution. It's absolutely ludicrous to believe that anybody would believe what Mr. Palmer suggested in that tale.
Well, let's go to Grant Palmer. What do you have to say?
Well, I've never made up my mind for my readers. They can reach their own conclusion. As for the Hoffman piece, I would say that your representation of it is not very accurate. I'm saying that there were a number of influences on whatever experience Joseph Smith had. Treasure hunting lore had an impact on him. His own experience had an impact on it. And yes, I believe that the ETA Hoffman, the Golden Pot, had some influence on him. But I'm not saying he went and found this and sat in a corner and says, boy, I'm going to pull one over on the world. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying it's an influence upon him. If you'll read the chapter carefully, you will come to the same conclusion. As for this being a one-sided book, it received a Best Book of the Year award by my peers, actually first runner-up to Will Bagley's book on Mountain Meadow Massacre from my fellow historians. So I don't think it's a one-sided a thing at all, a book at all. And yes, much of it is what has been found. The march of the evidence in the last 35 years has not been very kind to the LDS tradition, I don't believe. I simply gathered up what's been done by the new Mormon historians and distilled it into one book that's penetrated the grassroots of the church. But I'm not telling people what to say in there. It has a very neutral tone, and I believe it's well documented.
Is it? Do you hear a lot of this kind of criticism of your work?
Most of the criticism I hear is from people who work for the church, and they're welcome to their own opinion. I mean, usually when people say I don't like this or that, I'll say, well, which chapter of the book did you like? And usually they'll say something good about the book. So let's just leave it at that.
Well, it seems like you're not looking for total agreement or total that there has to be consensus.
No, in fact, at the onset of this discussion, you said that this book was written to generate some discussion, and it has.
So let's talk again. What can people do if they want to support or not support you, but to get their opinion about the church's decision to put you on trial, in effect? What kinds of things can people give their opinion about? If it was someone else, if you heard that another scholar, maybe it was one of the scholars who have been run out, I think of Stephen Epperson from BYU who was run out of there. I mean, what would you do?
To support them?
Sure.
Well, that depends on what kind of person you are. I've never really been high on candlelight vigils or surrounding the stake center and singing hymns or placards at temples and so forth, and that's not me, and I don't like that approach. I think the internet, emails to perhaps President Hinckley or to my stake president, or just to let him know that there's people whose faith have not necessarily been damaged at all by this. In fact, two white collar convicts had called me and said, you know, I really liked your book, and the reason we did is because Joseph Smith had a lot of problems, and we've been in prison, and this really gave us hope. I had another man from Virginia call me and say, yeah, I've been inactive in the church for years, and after reading your book, if you can stay somewhat active, so I think I'll come back. So you have that, but I've never counseled anyone to ever leave the church. In fact, I've tried to talk people into staying into the church and just to try to become a more Christ-centered experience.
Let me give our listeners the fax number for Gordon B. Hinckley, 240-2033. That's 801-240-2033. Grant Palmer, thank you so much for being on Radioactive today. Today's show was produced and directed by Troy Williams, executive producer Ryan Trenair, technical direction by Troy Munn. Stream our shows at KRCL.org. Tomorrow, Lorna talks with lawyers from the Rocky Mountain Innocence Center who are working to help overturn wrongful convictions. But stay tuned for Bioneers.